Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 334 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard, who has a special message for you.
We just wanted to thank everybody for the iTunes reviews this week. We can't thank you enough for that. It's the best thing you can do for us and this podcast if you enjoy it. Please remember to rate and review the show. It gets us up the charts and all sorts of analytics on the iTunes charts, and it really does bring in a lot of new listeners to the show. We've picked up quite a few new listeners recently. We want to thank you guys for joining us on the show, and now on with the show.
All right. First up, we have our first movie, Star Wars Episode 8.
Let the past die. That's the only way to become what you were meant to be.
Darkness rises, and light to meet it.
I need someone. Show me my place in all this.
Come on! This is not going to go the way you think.
All right, Rey develops her newly discovered abilities with the guidance of Luke Skywalker, who is unsettled by the strength of her powers. Meanwhile, the Resistance prepares for battles with the First Order, and other shit happens too. I don't know. Is this one of your favorite Star Wars movies or what?
This is my least favorite Star Wars movie of all time. Honestly, this is my... I think it's as bad as not...
I know. I almost don't want to give a review for this movie because... And by the way, can we just, for all the people that complained that The Force Awakens was just Star Wars Episode 4 all over again, is this not just a rehash of Empire Strikes Back?
Is this not just undoing everything The Force Awakens set up? I mean, is this not totally...
Not really.
Why would you go back and ever watch The Force Awakens? My
issue with this movie is really the theme of the film, which is that... And something that happens in pretty much every sequence or scene of this movie with every single character is that you see only what you want to see or what you need to see. And so every reveal in this movie is not true, right? It's not a real reveal. And it's constant throughout the whole thing. And it even happens with the big reveal of Rey's parents, right? And it's so easy to walk this whole thing back and have her and have this not be true, and you know.
I just think that this was a very thin story for how much time it took to tell. I mean, outside of my own personal feelings about how they treated certain characters like Luke and what the Force is and changing things around, fine. This isn't my Star Wars anymore. It's a younger generation Star Wars. But they have to still pander a little bit to diehard fans or old school fans, which we both are. And this movie was a blatant finger up the middle to that. Only one or two scenes had the sort of mojo or momentum vibe that I was looking for in this very, very long 2 hours and 20 minutes. I thought this was a very clumsy film. I thought that sequence in the casino was so George Lucas-like. I don't know what they were upset about Lucas.
Well, most of the movie is pointless. As pointless as the casino scene, right? I mean, the whole Phantasm thing or whatever the hell her name is. Fight sequence where they get caught. Actually, that entire casino side story thing is just stupid.
Most of the movies like that. The Del Toro's character is not relevant. What's up with the very pro animal situation going on in this movie? I love animals, don't get me wrong, but like we have to go over here and release these animals from captivity, and this animal is doing it's
something
odd,
to like, do, right? I mean, that's one of the issues with this movie is it doesn't have an actual plot. I mean, the plot of this movie is a very slow pursuit, right? That's the entire plot.
Yeah, and we've gone so far now into this story with these characters. And we're supposed to be invested, and then they do things that are totally out of character. in my opinion. Even the telekinetic – I'm not even talking about what Luke does. I'm talking about the telekinetic communicating between Rey and Kylo there. I mean, why does he take off the helmet and smash it in the first 5 minutes? That was the most intriguing part of that character.
Well, that's how you get rid of it, you know.
Totally unwound all of
that. Got to get rid of that helmet, you know, so so he can see his face, so he can emote and act.
Even the action sequences were underwhelming.
It's a pointless movie because you're nowhere at the beginning of the movie versus the end of the movie. You're nowhere further through this, whatever the hell the storyline is for these three movies. I'm so confused as to the arc of this or where this is supposedly going, because there is just literally no reveals in this movie. Am I wrong? I mean, the big reveal in this movie is literally nothing. That's the reveal.
That's why I've been there. And at that point, I was so disenfranchised here. Yeah. I was just disenchanted with this franchise, I should say, that I couldn't care less, and I just wanted it to be done. Yeah, the battle on the salt planet is cool with the whites turning into reds and keeping
with
the old
visual
theme.
That's a moment, and we've seen it in the trailer.
I agree. This movie's
stupid
full of moments.
When Luke Skywalker is just astro projecting himself there, right? Which doesn't make any sense because the big spoiler, everyone's already seen this movie, so I'm not really worried about it. But the dude dies anyway, so why the hell does he have to pretend to be there?
You are asking questions that I couldn't answer, and I don't
think
the
movie just makes no sense. It's just a bunch of noise. It's just and absolutely, as I've said, with the theme of the film being that you're not seeing the truth, that no character here sees the whole truth ever. What is the point of it? Because in the third movie or in the next movie, I can walk this back pretty easily. I can make any of this, you know, true, not true, anything very easily, you know, because, they only saw what they wanted to see. It's like, well, yeah, that's the whole movie. I want to see what I want to see. How about that?
Let me ask you this. Do you appreciate The Force Awakens a little bit more now? Because I was really hyped on that when it came out.
I do. But this is a continuing problem that I've had with movies in general, maybe aside from Marvel films, but in general over the past, I don't know, decade or so, it's been consistent where I've seen at least once or two movies a year where I've been like, wow, that really makes me appreciate the shit movies I had before that I was upset about. I was upset about crappy movies a year before. Well, now those, you know, seem so bad. You know, I don't know. That's not a good trend.
Well, you brought up Marvel, and I'll say this in closing on Star Wars for me, that with Marvel, I've been able to follow fairly well what's going on over 17 or 18 films now. And from the last Star Wars to this Star Wars and where we are now, I have no idea what is going on.
I don't even know why I would care.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's much of a problem. I mean, the other thing this movie did was it really took this big universe and made it super tiny, right? I mean, when no one showed up to like the rebels' plea of like, come help us. And when it's really just this one, comes down to just this one spaceship full of rebels and these other guys and a couple spaceships following them slowly. It's like, where's the Star Wars at?
Well, it's very isolated.
Where's the wars? Yeah.
Like,
what is going on? Who is in danger here? If these rebels get wiped out, what happens? Nothing? Like, does the Empire just be like, well, I guess we're done? Like, what is the end game? I'm so confused. I think that this, I really think that J.J. Abrams was just the wrong person to run this, as well as Kennedy running the whole LucasArts thing. He's just not done a good job either.
I was very down on Solo, you know, because of this, and now we saw that trailer we talked
about
last
show. Fantastic.
So now I'm back on board with that. But this saga or this branch of Star Wars, I think I'm bowing out of now.
Yeah. You'll see the next one.
You're damn right. Hopefully I enjoy it more than this one. All right, our next film is the ecological disaster film Geostorm, starring Gerard Butler.
I have a mystery that I'd like to solve in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong? There was a gas main explosion.
Yeah, you just keep believing that. We built a system of satellites to control the weather. But someone has turned the system against us.
They're trying to change the map of the world.
Three. Two.
I've got you.
Geostorm, only in cinemas.
A network of satellites designed to control the global climate starts to attack Earth. In this fairly low-key action thriller that is very reminiscent of the kind of things we used to get in 1996. This is kind of like Twister and Independence Day wrapped in one. I know you probably got the Independence Day thing as well there. But did this not remind you? I mean, obviously, Roland Emmerich is the co-creator of these things with Dean Devlin, who directed this project. But I thought The Day After Tomorrow was the direct influence of this. My problem with this movie, it's actually a little bit better than I thought it was going to be, particularly because of those trailers were really bad. But it doesn't get to the goddamn storms until about an hour into an hour and 50-minute movie. I thought we needed to move things along a little bit better. But for where it was, maybe a guilty pleasure on my end.
Yeah, I agree. My expectations were so low for this that when I finally saw this movie, and it's not bad. I don't know how else to
it's
put
not
it,
good, but it's not a real bad.
Well, the thing about it is it's a real actual movie, and
movie,
I appreciate those 90s not really themes, but the ideals of like the guy and his daughter and like and the moments that characters had and it felt very 90s. It felt very trumped up emotionally, right? Like they were trying to make this not just some Geostorm movie, right? This just focus on the storms, which you had a problem with, but I really didn't. And I love the aspect of them going to space and then having to do stuff in the space station and the action sequences and stuff that didn't even have anything to do with storms. I quite liked, and I have to say I kind of like this movie. It feels like a VHS film from the 90s that I would have rented and quite enjoyed and been inspired by, perhaps a little bit, you know?
I'm smiling over here because, you know, we don't talk about this for the most part off air. We wait till we get on air to discuss these movies with one another so it can be fresh for you listeners. And I was holding on to my crotch, jumping into the cold water here. We're worried what you were going to say, waiting for the impact here. And then you said you kind of liked it too. And I said, all right, now I don't feel so dumb. Because as this thing started playing out, I just started, you know, like same thing. The beats would happen and this and that. And you kind of reflect back and go, oh, this is the kind of thing that would have happened in something like Swordfish or Red Planet.
It literally feels 96, 97, right in that sweet
spot.
Right
in that pocket.
It just feels like that kind of a movie. And I really like that. Yeah, it was very comforting. It's very easy to watch, I thought, and exciting when it needs to be. Emotional, I guess, when it needs to be. It's not really emotional, you know. But you know what I mean.
It's got
the beats. Hits all the right part. Yeah, it does. It really hits all the right beats, and so I was glad that this is a movie that existed. I feel like I feel a little bit bad that I didn't actually go see this in theaters, but.
I don't know if I would have enjoyed it the same. I think
really, you think more of a small screen thing.
It's so, like you said, comforting is a weird term for a movie about the destruction of the world, but that's kind of what it is in a sense. It's very assured, you know. It knows what it wants to do. It's good of its type, and it has no qualms with being this kind of secondary, almost B movie with the A level talent.
Right.
I mean, this cast here is great in this thing, including Butler, who I thought I was getting a little tired of, but he pulls.
Isn't
it
he
off.
Good in this?
Yeah, he really is. I thought.
Yeah,
I was
Jim
really
Sturgis is good. I like Abby Cornish is good. I know. I agree.
You even have the pros like Garcia and Ed Harris coming in for what are basically glorified cameos, but they knock out their situations too. So, really, a guilty pleasure, but a pleasure. I got to give this one a pass.
I would say guilty pleasure as well, because I do. I feel dirty giving such a great review to this, but it was one of those movies where, as I watched it, I just, you know, I just thought, I'm enjoying this way too much. This is wrong.
I can already see the iTunes comments piling up. You guys hated Star Wars, but you like Geostorm? Like, it's a different type of situation. Expectations were very minor for this and were exceeded, and my Star Wars expectations were a little higher.
Okay,
what do we got next?
All right, up next we got another space actioner, Cloverfield Paradox.
Three. Morning, beautiful.
Two.
I'm getting sick of only seeing you on a screen.
One.
Please, God. Be on our side.
Standing by for your go.
Turn that shit on.
Fingers crossed.
It's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know what you do?
What the hell is happening?
Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there.
The Earth. It's gone.
It's big, blue, full of angry people. Keep looking, you'll find it.
Orbiting a planet in the brink of war, scientists test a device to solve an energy crisis and end up face-to-face with a dark alternate reality. Sounds exciting. In practice, not so exciting. Cloverfield Paradox, for me, is definitely just the worst of the three Cloverfield movies, especially after Cloverfield and then 10 Cloverfield Lane. And then you're going to hit me with the Cloverfield Paradox, and oh my God, is this just, this is the bad kind of 90s sci-fi stuff. You know, we talk about Geostorm being actually good. This is the other side of that coin.
100%. I mean, everything you just said, I agree. I gave 4 stars to the original Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I put on my top 10 of the year.
And this is a 1.5, 2-star at best movie.
At best. This reminds me of the Drek we used to get in the late 90s, things like Supernova.
Yes, but I love Supernova because Supernova still has the charm of that cheap shit 90s, where this movie is completely cold and just is super boring for the most part of it. And where's the action in this movie?
But where is the rooting element? I don't connect with any of these
characters. Where's the fucking monster, man?
It has a decent cast. It has all this weird shit going on where, it, and visually,
who is the monster? Both Cloverfield movies had a monster. You can argue John Goodman's the monster in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Which it makes even better.
And where is the monster of the Cloverfield Paradox? There isn't one. I don't know where it is, what it is. It's just
when
nothing.
When one character's arm comes off or his hand and it becomes like its own thing, I just thought, like, are we going Sam Raimi style here? Are we just going to go for this zaniness? Because the tone of it is nowhere near that. Really, I thought it was very monotonous, kind of downbeat. Yes. Very boring in a lot of ways. All the little side stories with these characters.
It doesn't explain much, right? But there's not much to explain, right? It's just nothing.
It's underdeveloped is what it is. It felt undercooked. Yeah. It felt like it wasn't ready to be presented yet, but they presented it. And you watch
I just think...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the idea of it, if you look at 10 Cloverfield Lane, and the idea of 10 Cloverfield Lane, you think... All right, well, that is about equal to the idea of the Cloverfield Paradox, really, in both just in mass of the idea, right, of in everything you could do with it. But they took that in Cloverfield Lane and they created characters and things that you cared about and situations which just don't exist in the Cloverfield Paradox, right? This thing really just centers on this scientific test and then nothing more. That's it, you know? Like, it doesn't... really go into any of the characters, doesn't really put anyone in any kind of a situation or even in a long lasting dangerous situation. It feels like even when the guy loses his arm, that whole sequence was very cool and interesting and stuff. But then it's just over. He's just without an arm, but it doesn't matter. Like how could that not up the stakes? It doesn't.
There's nothing original in this movie. And I know we just talked about Geostorm, which is a totally trite and lives off of
cliches. But it knows it.
But it owns it, and it does it with a certain glee. This has this air of kind of an esoteric air that it's better than, you know, it's going to be for the intellectual crowd, and it's going to be this thinking
piece. It has that Cloverfield name on it.
Yeah, but you know, the other two films are very, very good. This is just... It just exists.
This
and
movie
it's not
doesn't...
good filmmaking on top of it. I thought the other two were actually very well directed.
Hell no,
there are moments in 10 Cloverfield Lane. There are certain sequences in that movie that could be short films of them themselves. Nothing in this movie has connective tissue and feels like one scene of it does one thing. Then we're over here. Now we're trying to do this. And I think they think, oh, well, because you've seen the other two and you're going to try to piece together how this works into there and maybe we're going to make these theories. It's not clever anymore, guys. It's really not. I'm kind of done with this Cloverfield situation with this. I don't want to go any further down the rabbit hole. It's not interesting anymore, you know?
Well, as long as they don't do any more of this, just slap Cloverfield in the title, you know, because really this doesn't have anything to do with Cloverfield is a thing. And even 10 Cloverfield Lane really doesn't have anything to do with Cloverfield. It's just a great movie in and of itself. Of course, it had Dan Trachtenberg, who's actually a surprisingly fantastic director. I don't know, this Julius Ona guy? I don't even know. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm not familiar with his work.
Who knows who Dan Trachtenberg is, I guess, really, but aside from his sister being Michelle Trachtenberg.
Well, I think these are all J.J. Abrams prodigies, right? Out of Bad Robot and that whole situation. So they get these projects and they're given leeway to do X, Y, and Z on it. And then, oh, hey, that World War II movie we're doing is really a Cloverfield movie. That space movie we're doing is really Cloverfield.
But isn't this just this? This is such a J.J. Abrams bullshit thing that he does. He did this with, he essentially did this with Star Trek. He's doing this with Star Wars now. He did this with Lost, right? He just throws, three sheets to the wind. Just whatever. Whatever comes next, just do it and slap his,
Would you have been, lighter on this film, or would you have been more forgiving on this movie if it didn't have the Cloverfield in the title?
No, this is a dog shit movie. That's kind of the point I was trying to make with the 10 Cloverfield Lane, is that even though it says 10 Cloverfield Lane, it's a great movie regardless of that, and really doesn't need the Cloverfield thing.
Yeah.
This entire movie's existence is based on that Cloverfield stamp, right? That it's, this is Cloverfield. This is going to explain to you what Cloverfield is. But really, this movie is easily summed up in one sentence, and it doesn't expand on that. So what's the point of its existence? Nothing. It's a terrible
movie. I felt like
movie.
It was spinning its wheels for a long portion of that film too.
Not good.
Okay, let's move on. Our next film is Steven Soderbergh's latest film, Logan Lucky.
You were just fired.
I have full custody.
I'm getting a lawyer.
With what money?
Charlotte Motor Speedway. I know how they move the money.
We need a computer whiz.
I know everything there is to know about computers, okay? All the Twitters, I know them.
You Logans mustn't be as simple-minded as people say.
People say that.
Logan Lucky, rated PG-13, August 18th.
Jimmy and Clyde Logan set out to execute an elaborate robbery at the Coca-Cola 600 to reverse a family curse and clear their family name. Soderbergh's latest is a charming little action heist thriller here. I really enjoyed this one. If you can get past the opening few minutes of this, which is a bit awkward and clumsy, I think that Tatum has the accents are a little much here. Yeah. The driver and Tatum, I think that they are almost caricatures in a sense, mm-hmm. but it did grow on me as the movie went along. I mean, Craig stumbles the most with the Daniel Craig's accent is atrocious in this. But when you got guys like Seth MacFarlane popping up as a Billy Badass and beating the shit out of Channing Tatum in a bar, everything kind of goes out the window. And Katie Holmes was surprisingly, I thought, pretty good in this. I grew to like Driver and Tatum in these roles. And for a redneck Ocean's 11 type movie, I thought it came on and did its job fairly well. I didn't mind this movie at all. In fact, I kind of give it a low-key pass.
Yeah, low-key pass is a good term for it. I thought this movie was a little bit slow, on the slow side. This needs to pick it up and actually get to the heist and everything a lot quicker than it does. Once it does do that, I thought it was not a bad movie. It has its moments of humor, I thought. I did like all the acting, and I even like the accents. The accents, I think, are purposefully bad, especially James Bond's there.
It's bad. Yeah, his is real bad.
But I think on purpose,
There's no real like suspense in the film, though. I mean,
that's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of just blank spaces in this movie. It feels very drawn out. It's a little too slow for me because, the twist at the ending, which I guess we won't say because I'm not sure how many people have actually seen Logan Lucky. Is available on Amazon though for anyone that wants to go watch it. It came out of left field for me, I guess, a little bit. Even though it happened right after, well, hell, just the setup. It's really a double twist,
which is
interesting.
That's Soderbergh. But the setup, though, is it not? Isn't that what happened in the Ocean?
It is. It's happened in a lot of his movies where there's a double twist where you think, oh, this is the twist, and then in fact you're not quite out of the corkscrew there, you know,
right?
Which is good, and he pulled it off very well, but it just felt very out of left field to me, that entire ending sequence from the beginning of that twist, which is really when he goes to the daughter's recital,
which is why this movie has that extra 10 minutes in it. I think it does feel a little bit long-winded, I'll say that, and does take too long to get going. But I thought those early slow scenes were paid off when you find out that stuff going on and they kind of.
But when you find that stuff out, doesn't it seem overdone? It just why was that done? Why was that the plan? I guess to begin with, because I don't see how it helped anyone.
Yeah.
To do that, you know, other than it's a neat twist at the end of the movie. Other than that, I don't see how that literally how that helped anybody.
I mean, you got to use the metaphor of the racetrack here. And I think it's all about the ride, not the where you finish, honestly. It's
where you finish, believe me.
Yeah, that's what she said. But it's how this movie was going. I was enjoying it minute by minute. When it was over, it was kind of a, you know, but I gave it style points. I like, you know, we talked about the last couple movies existing in the 90s. This one would have been right at home in 1981. I mean, you could have put Burt Reynolds in this thing and it would have been fine back in the 80s. So this is has a very retro vibe to it that I like. I like the fact that they're showing this kind of people, and the NASCAR isn't something, you know, open wheel or stock car isn't something that gets a lot of screen time in the movies. And
it doesn't get a lot of screen time here.
Right, that's true, but it is not a
NASCAR movie.
This is a certain type of person and people that they're showing that aren't always shown in Hollywood movies. They make movies for the coast, they say, and this is obviously not the coast people. But I liked it for what it was. I thought it had some sort of flair. And I think Soderbergh is just a fucking natural-born storyteller. He finds all these interesting angles and – and the conversation – he wrote the script, even though it's credited to Rebecca Blunt. That's his fake name there. But in his recent work, this is what makes Above the Bet. I thought that the last couple were pretty bad. This was good, and I thought Side Effects was his last good one besides this.
Well, I still – I said this to you off air. I'm going to say it again. Before you go giving all this praise to this, you really need to see Hell or High Water, and you will see what an actual director can do.
I know I haven't seen that one yet. It's bad.
From beginning opening sequence to end, that movie is just directed beautifully, written fantastically, and to me really held my interest way more than Logan Lucky, even though Logan Lucky aired a little more on the humor side of things, a little bit more on the ridiculous. But I don't know, just pales in comparison to Hell or High Water.
Well, Hell or High Water is a lot more, like you said, a lot more serious, and was a Best Picture nominee. This is, I think, has a much more modest aim in its ambitions. And for me, it succeeded for what it was trying to do.
Wow. All right. That just means it didn't aim so high. So.
I mean, the guy's making movies with his iPhone nowadays.
No, so yeah.
These are modest movies.
All right.
Let's get into the trailer addict part of today's show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right, up first, we are going underwater in submergence.
So, what's down there at the deepest part of the sea?
Close your eyes. Close them. The ocean has five layers. Let's go. The first contains all the plant life and coral reefs.
Somalia is not a good idea, Jay.
I know.
Good luck, Jay.
Whatever memory you have of submersion is there in the blue water.
Okay. I'm in.
I'm in too. The next layer is the Twilight Zone. All other colors and light vanish. The blackness you're in now. No one can reach you down there.
I don't want death, Danny. Not in this place.
walking beside you.
This is the other world in our world.
James is a British agent under the cover of a water engineer, played by James McAvoy, while Danny, played by Alicia Vikander, is a biomathematician working on a deep-sea diving project to explore the origin of life on our planet. On a chance encounter in a remote resort in Normandy, where they both prepare for their respective missions, they fall rapidly and unexpectedly into each other's arms, and a deliriously wild love affair develops, even though their jobs are destined to separate them. I really feel the weight of this trailer. I think it's a beautiful trailer. I'm not so sure I'm going to actually like this movie because, I don't know, this could be quite boring. But the trailer with the score, with the fantastic deliveries of both McAvoy and Vikander, I think really, I just feel the weight of this. I really feel like I want them to be together.
I was reminded of the distance between oceans or the light mm-hmm. between us. The film she did with Fassbender, her husband last year, which was trying for this vibe and didn't hit it at all. I felt the kind of morose, melancholy weight of this trailer too. I thought it's beautifully done in the juxtaposition of where they're at on land and water. Mm-hmm. Wim Wenders, who's behind this, did Paris, Texas. I mean, the original City of Angels, you know, great German filmmaker, but
sure.
sometimes his films get away from him, much like Terrence Malick. And this looks like this might, I mean, I needed you to read me that description, and I had seen this trailer twice now, but I needed you to read me that description to understand exactly what the hell was going
That's
on.
That's what I'm afraid of, right? Great trailer. And like I said, I feel the weight of this trailer. Beautiful music, wonderful deliveries, and beautifully cut to the point where it's like, oh yes, I feel his want to like get out of the situation and get back to her. Is that going to carry through in the movie? Yeah, I don't know.
And he has a kind of a passage for making 3-hour movies. I think like 2:45. So it's
I feel like Allied was recently a similar thing to this, where I saw the trailer and I thought, wow, it looks really beautiful and everything. Not a movie I got through. Did not get through Allied.
But Alicia Vikander, is that Vikander? Who's coming up in the recent Tomb Raider reboot. Mm-hmm. She's really becoming one of the screen's great beauties. I mean, she's
great as
person.
Just in this, James McAvoy, and her. That's why I'm saying this is two people who can really deliver some lines to the point where it's just like, oh yeah, like you're like those. Oh, they're actors. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
those people are actors. Yeah,
McAvoy's been solid for years. He rarely makes a misstep, and even in bad films, he's in the interesting part of them. So I can't fault him for anything here. He does look like he's letting himself age a little bit, and looks like he had some gray hair a couple scenes and whatnot. So they haven't pretty boyed him up, and
sure.
It looks like he is aging nicely.
Vikander, of course, is Academy Award for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, and rightly so. I think that she is. Going to be a huge, huge star, but she keeps picking these quirky projects in addition to doing the Tomb Raider stuff, and that's the kind of things that great careers are built on. So I look forward to seeing not only Tomb Raider, but this as well. All right, our next trailer is for Amy Schumacher's latest comedy, I Feel Pretty.
Are you shopping for a gift?
Kind of browsing for me.
So sizing is a little limited here in the store, but you could probably find your size online.
I have a crazy idea. Let's be honest for a minute. No matter how many times we hear, it's what's on the inside that matters. Women know deep down, it's what's on the outside that the whole world judges.
You okay? I'm just like dealing with low self-esteem and like...
I want to punch you right in your dumb face right now. Do you have every rib that I have? I've been on all of these sites. No one even looks at the profile. They only care about the picture. And I'm sick of it! I've always wondered what it feels like to be just undeniably pretty.
Are you okay?
You hit your head pretty hard.
Wait, that's
me. That's me. Oh my God, you see this?
Yes.
I'm beautiful!
Recognize me.
That's me. You guys, it's me. Renee.
What's happening?
Oh, full spin.
What can I get you?
Yeah, two. Thank you.
That's gold. Number 118.
What's your number?
That's really clever.
That's clever.
What's your number? Give me your phone. I'm going to give you my number.
Are you still talking to
Don't
me?
Don't chicken out now, son. If I
was you, this would be quite a large promotion for you. What are your goals exactly?
I get it. And yes, modeling is an option for me. But it's not who I am.
Wow.
Things have really changed for me.
You just have all the confidence in the world.
I think a lot of people completely miss a thing that really makes them awesome. And you're not like that.
Ooh, a bikini contest. Let's go. DJ, hit it. I thought you might want a sneak peek of what's to come.
I don't know if you know what sneak peek means. You're completely naked.
Amy Schumer is Renee, who gains newfound confidence after she falls and hits her head at a bicycling class. I was a big fan of Schumer's stand-up when she first arrived on the scene. I thought the trailers for Trainwreck and Snatched were excellent. The movies, not so much. I do like this trailer, though, and I have high hopes for it, but I have a feeling this is going to fall into a very sentimental groove at some point and get really overly sloppy and heavy-handed. So I don't know. This movie looks like it's going to be a laugh fest, but at the same time, I could see where it gets real sad here or attempts to be poignant.
Well, I'm a big fan of Trainwreck. I think that actually is a good movie.
You didn't think that went on for much too long and got way too sentimental?
No, absolutely not. I think sentimentality is the whole point of these fucking comedies like this. And I say that with the F word in it just so that I sound a little more manly.
Well, your toxic masculinity will not be heard on this podcast.
But my issue with this is, I don't know, this feels like we're just going down the rabbit hole here for no other reason than to do it. You know, this feels a lot like Shallow Hal to me.
Yeah,
which is something that a movie I do quite enjoy, but is definitely a minor note in the Jack Black catalog, you know. And this feels like this feels like a spiral down, right? It feels like more like, what can we do like Trainwreck? What can we put her in? You know, I don't know. What's the other girl? You know, the Tammy girl.
You know, Emily,
the Ghostbuster.
What's
her name? She got a movie coming out too. Melissa McCarthy. She's having the same issue, I think, that in her career right now, where she just can't find. She's typecast so much, I guess you'd say, that you just can't find material to support that. That's how I feel about Amy Schumer at this point.
Well, I also think,
especially
that
with this.
This movie, I mean, it was a little confusing, too. I mean, with the Emily Ratajkowski character, you know, the really attractive Greek model girl who was in Gone Girl, she's in this trailer. And I thought they were going to do like a body switch. That's what I thought initially had happened, that they went and worked out together.
It would probably be a better movie if they did.
You know, because
I
was
like,
okay,
Amy Schumer
switch.
Couldn't really be in the movie.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
Unless it would have to be the pretty girl being ugly.
The pretty girl acting like that. But, I mean, that's why I thought she was acting like she was, you know, this model, because this girl was – they had changed spirits and stuff. So the fact that she basically is concussed and has CTE and decides that she's someone else isn't really that funny. And this – outside of one or two little blurbs, I didn't find this that amusing. So I don't know. I feel Pretty is a pretty bad and shitty title for it too. I mean – What do we?
Well, like Shallow Hal, you know, it kind of sums up the whole idea. This is also, I guess, a very late 90s, early 2000s type of a comedy, isn't it? Where you kind of single around that an idea, I guess, more so.
Yeah, we talk about
characters or anything else.
You were saying about how this feels like a Farley Brothers movie, and it does definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
And I said that I didn't like sentimental in comedies, and mm-hmm. Shallow Hal is definitely full of sentimentality, which is a great movie.
That's a great movie.
Isn't it amazing that the Farleys probably couldn't get those movies made today in the era that we live
well,
in?
Well,
hell
no,
all
and I think the sentimentality is a big part of what makes their movies great, but also what makes their movies really hard to digest for a lot of people, you know? Because you need that you need the sweet. Well, you need
the sour to make
the
sweet
sour as well as the sweet. Yeah, I mean, look at the Kevin Smith movies, right? It's very similar setups. So I don't know. It's just you know. The problem is with how far with these do you go when you get into this type of things? Is sooner or later you wind up with, you know, where Matthew McConaughey was in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, right?
Yeah,
which is really an end of a career type situation, right?
Yeah, you're basically floundering in romantic comedies, and this one looks a one note romantic comedy. Okay, let's move on and talk about The Incredibles right. 2.
Behold the Underminer!
Watch after Jack Jack.
I thought we were gonna go.
You heard your mother, trampoline. We meet again.
Superheroes are illegal.
We want to fight bad guys.
I never see bad guys.
It defines who I am.
We're not saying you have. What?
Someone on TV said it.
I was approached by this tycoon. Wants to talk about hero stuff.
Help me bring supers back into the sunlight. We need Elastigirl.
Bye, sweetie.
I'll watch the kids, no problem.
That's not the way you're supposed to do it, Dad. They want us to do it this
way. I don't know that way. Why would they change math? Math is math. Math is math.
All over Dusseldorf. Dussels are dozing. Their eyelids so heavy, they're drooping.
Closing!
I couldn't have done this if you hadn't taken over so well.
I've got to succeed so she can succeed. So we can succeed.
I get it, Bob.
What the?
That is freaky.
But I can't keep giving him cookies.
Oh!
He's freaking. Nobody in a daddy.
What?
Done properly, parenting is a heroic act. Done properly.
Mr. Incredible is left to care for Jack-Jack while Elastigirl is out saving the world. And this trailer hurts me as much as reading that synopsis for you, because this is just not anything. I thought this was going to be more of a superhero Incredibles movie like the first one. While it does have that family flair to it, it is nowhere. He's a house dad. That's the movie, really. That's where we're going for. I don't know. This reminds me. It's just a letdown. This reminds me of a little bit of the Spy Kids movies as they went forward, continually getting worse. And I guess this is Pixar. It kind of feels a little Cars-ish to me. You know, make an Incredibles 2 because we need to. What do you think?
I see what you're saying. I thought the same thing. Like, this looks small, you know, to use what you were talking about, Star Wars. That felt small to me when the fact that she's kind of out doing the dare doing and he's at home playing Mr. Mom. I do like the jokes about
it. Can't be a whole movie, though, right?
The math core jokes are funny. And sure. You know, him nodding off is funny. I like that stuff. I love these characters so much.
But how can this be?
This isn't the only thing going on in this movie.
How can this be Incredibles 2, right? I mean, I don't mind the. I guess the family stuff, you know, that's in the first one, really. That movie's all about family and recognizing, as most animation movies are, right? Recognizing the wonder that is within you or whatever, you know, aspiring to what you could possibly be. You know, all that goody two-shoes nonsense stuff. It's great, and it's fantastic in the first movie, but to set up a movie based on just that idea, like, I don't, is this a movie at all?
It feels
like a short film.
Still very, very selective trailer of what the movie's going to be about. I hope that's the case. Even so, even if it's just this,
I don't know, I just read you the synopsis
story. These filmmakers, I know, right? That's what they got so far. Even so, I do feel that Pixar, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for pulling off a lot of miracles, and they don't come usually in the form of sequels to their stuff. They're usually
They've had some crap too, so I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, but their originals are so good. I mean, Moana, Coco. You go down the list of these things sucks. Recently.
Is that even Pixar?
Hey, it's okay. You're welcome. All right, I like that one there. I like that one. Moana was great. I like Moana.
Is literally about nothing. Nothing happens in that movie, and everything that does happen in that movie is completely pointless.
And it's a kids' movie. Is there any?
It's given away to you at the end. No, poor excuse. Yeah, Angry Birds is not very good either. Poor excuse. It's a kids' movie. I mean, that means you shouldn't be entertained with it, or you shouldn't be looking at it in any other way other than just to sit there. And well, I mean, were you high when you watched it?
Well, why else are we watching a kids' movie? Right?
Because they're good. You're telling me The Incredibles isn't great.
They're better
just on
when
its
you're
own?
Stoned too. I mean, what do you want to say? You watch a fucking Pixar movie, Stone. You're gonna be like, oh, I'll never do any other way. You know, and the bad ones are just as bad when you're stoned. So
fair enough.
But I will give this one the benefit of the doubt. I love the first one so much. I do think that it's been a long time, though, between films. And I thought maybe that they would do the thing of letting the children grow into what they would actually be today, age-wise, and having to deal with, you know, having empty nest syndrome and still being crime fighters.
That would have been better,
I think. The kids are out doing their things, and they're full-on superheroes, and they're the forgotten ones. That was what I thought they were
going to
go with.
And maybe that could still be a part of this. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe this isn't the whole story here.
But if not, I just gave Pixar a free idea. I expect my residual.
Incredibles 3.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Story by Jason Rugard.
I'm going to have to pull this fucking thing out for evidence.
You better, copyright this podcast, that sumbitch. Write that down, send it into the Writers Guild immediately.
If I ever had to replay this in front of a jury, oh, please. I'm just shrinking in my chair. Yes, Your Honor. I don't know. I think that's going to wrap up our episode tonight. We want to do a little review here and let you guys run down what we had done tonight. Both of us agreed that the last Star Wars movie was no good. We both agreed that Geostorm was better than expected. We were in agreement once again on Cloverfield, saying it's not worth your time or the Cloverfield name. We split on Logan Lucky. I enjoyed it more than Trevor, who thought it was a little bit slow out the gate. And I found it to be a funny and enjoyable little time. And on the trailers, we both think that The Incredibles possibly might be a letdown.
The jury's out. It depends on how much you smoke before.
Exactly. And once again, I think that might basically apply to the Amy Schumer film, too. We'll let you know when it comes out, because Trevor will be the one seeing
and
so
possibly see Submergence as well.
If that thing's 3 hours, you best believe.
You'll be asleep.
Yeah, I doze for 45 minutes and wake back up. I did that recently I gotta tell you a little story before we get there. I recently went and saw a movie. I dozed for about 20 minutes in a very crucial point of the movie.
It was probably better.
And I woke up not really understanding how we got to where we were. So I had to come home and go on one of those streaming sites and watch the 20 minutes that somebody had camcordered in the movie just so I could get what I missed out of the movie.
What movie was it?
It was The Commuter. It was The Commuter.
What?
It was The Commuter. You know, it was crazy. Yeah. And you
how did you miss a part of The Commuter where you're like, what's going on? Well, what happens in that movie?
Because he was a normal guy, and the next thing you know, he's literally.
Shit. So you missed the whole setup.
Well, you know, I don't mind telling you, I came from a dentist appointment and I saw a 9:30 showing, which for this guy is a little bit early. So, you know, by 10:30, I took a little nap there. And I had to come home and rewatch it. Well, that movie literally went off the tracks at one point. I thought, well, we started off so grounded. How did we get here?
Oh, you knew it was going to do that.
It was one of those sleeps, too, where like loud noises kept waking me up and I was getting pissed. You know?
That was the movie.
Yeah, I know. There was no one else in the fucking thing. It was 9:30 a.m. I was literally the only guy in there. That's why I got comfortable. It was one of those warm reclining seats. I mean, I love these recliners they put in movies, but it was hard enough to stay awake when I had uncomfortable seats. Now I got a fucking recliner and it's 85 degrees
now
in there.
You might sleep through the movie more than once.
I might sleep through the next show. They might have to wake me up after the thing.
It's like riding the bus to the end of the line, you know?
It's like giving me a bottle and some NyQuil or something. I don't know. I'm like, you know, I'm just done at the end of the day. So So yeah, that was my commuter experience, which is why I haven't put out a review yet for, because I feel a little unethical doing that at the moment.
It was
so
probably,
I think I'm going to wait till it comes out to rewatch
it. Was probably better. It added more mystery to it.
It was definitely disorienting, I'll tell you that. And I'll tell you this. I woke up and went, I knew that guy was the bad guy from that fucking, the only scene I saw. Shit. Well, once again, thank you guys for joining us on this podcast. We have a blast doing this. We want to thank you all for your continued support and remind you once again to rate, review the show, however you feel on whatever format you guys are listening to this to, whether it be Stitcher, Podbean, whatever, Apple, iTunes, the whole nine. Review the show. If somebody's telling you about the show, review it to them. Just review the show for us, please. But thank you. For speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!